I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
This episode includes themes of mental health, self-harm, and suicide. If you need any support relating to the topics discussed, please check out our show notes and follow the links to organisations that can help.
Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast this week. As usual, I have the beautiful and wonderful Sara Elgan with me. Sara, how are you?
Oh, I love my intros so much, honestly.
Oh, I'm always that nice to you.
You are always that nice to me. I know, I'm sorry saying, I love it. I'm very well, thank you, Lawrence. How are you?
I've got to be honest, I'm a little bit tired.
Are you? Why are you tired?
Well, because when I played, I only played one game a week, didn't I? But now that we're working, and I'm not complaining about it, I'm doing two games a week, and I was at Saracens, and then I had to travel up to Leicester. And normally it's all very good, but there's train strikes at the moment, and it's a Sunday, and it's been a bit painful. A long day yesterday.
Have you waited till you got in here to, like, release your moanage to us?
He has.
Well, no, yeah. I thought I'd let you moan first, off the podcast.
I have been moaning today.
I'd come in. But no, I'm all right, thanks. Just a little bit weary.
It was also very cold this weekend, wasn't it?
It was cold, but it was wet up at Leicester.
Oh, where was your black jacket from on Friday? Love
Which
that.
One? Yeah, oh, the long matrixy one.
Yeah.
It was Zara. That. The majority of my clothes are Zara.
Pretending like you were really looking at it.
I'm looking at your glasses, actually. This is so random. Have you got new glasses?
Well, they are new because I lost them yesterday.
Oh, okay. So you got new ones.
I have invested in a really, really good pair of glasses, and they stay at home. They never leave the house.
Okay.
Then these are, well, £4.50 each. Right.
They look actually very expensive.
They're £4.50 each because I've got about 20 pairs of these because I seem to lose a lot of things.
No, I'm just saying because I think I need glasses. I think I've gotten to that age. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you read that over there?
You do when you read.
Well, the big sign that says Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio. I can just about manage that, Steve.
It's not too bad.
You do need glasses, especially when you're looking at your watch in London.
I'm always late. You know that. Anyway, how are you, Steve?
I'm good. Yeah, no. My son is... turns into a teenager tomorrow, so getting ready for the Kevin and Perry Outlook, which will come, which I'm sure you know all about that anyway. A bit of a comedy night last night as well. Went to see Ramesh Ranganathan.
Did you? I love him.
He was doing some new material at a pub in New Malden, which was really random.
I like the fact that they've all become like big-time superstars with their stage shows and their TV things, but getting back to the sort of spit and sawdust of a comedy club must be terrifying, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it was. Well, it's interesting because I've never seen somebody prepare doing new material before, and obviously he's got it all written down at the side, and he's going, now, should we do this one or should we do that one? And there was a couple that didn't go down very well, and he went, right, get rid of that.
That must be really interesting, though, to be a part of working out what's funny and not.
So is it a pilot where he's basically testing new material on
basically
people who are good at laughing? Is that
right? He did tell us how lucky we were to be there, which I kind of get. It's fair enough, isn't it?
Presumably he wants a few people there who are quite cynical, so you get a mixture. Because, I mean, Sarah and I laugh at anything, to be honest.
We laugh at Austin every weekend.
But you need someone who's a bit more cynical, who's sort of...
Yeah, I think you do. But it's just interesting to see how he fitted it all together, really.
I really like him.
Yeah, it's good. It's important for him to do that before he takes it to the O2 and get that stuff out of the way first.
You don't want the moment that happens when I tell jokes where you get there's a tumbleweed going again.
But they're called dad jokes.
They're for a particular audience.
Well, you've heard his voice already, actually, because our guest this week is the founder of a charity whose goal is to open up conversations about mental health, especially within the rugby community. It's Simon Trower. How are you, Simon?
I'm good, thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a privilege. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, it's really our privilege. And Simon, it's very timely that we've got you on as our guest. Round 8 of the Premiership this weekend was in support of the RPA's Restart charity and dedicated to raising awareness of players' mental health. And of course, with recent announcements, and there have been many actually, from Owen Farrell that he's going to take a break from international rugby to prioritise his and his family's mental well-being, there couldn't really be a better time to have you on the show and bring this topic to the table and, I guess, have an honest conversation about it. I know your reason for setting up Brave Mind is a very personal one. Are you happy to share that story with us and how you came to set up and start the charity?
Yeah, of course. That was my main purpose, to be honest, is sort of demonstrate vulnerability. And if I can help one person, then yeah, I've done my job, to be honest. So Brave Mind was started 2020, so lockdown. I think it was a massive time for reflection for everybody. But for me, it was around thinking about the two main passions in my life, which was rugby and my own mental health journey. My rugby journey started from the age of 6. I was born into a rugby household. Every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday was the rugby club. And I was an anxious child. I speak to my parents now and say, you know, what was I like as a kid? And they'll say, yeah, you were quite a nervy kid. But rugby was my therapy. It was something that I'd go and play, just forgot everything that was off the pitch for 80 minutes. I was diagnosed with depression, anxiety when I was 21, had a career-ending injury when I was 25, 26. And it got to 2019, where I offered my services at a local club just to coach. And a young lad joined us pre-season that year who was extremely open about his mental health. And for me, it was a big, like, wow, I'm not used to that. I'm 45. When I was playing, you just didn't mention it at all. It was very much a pull your socks up kind of environment, extremely masculine environment, let's call it that. But this lad, you know, had played England Students. He was at Bath University, but he attempted on his own life. But he was extremely open about his mental health. And he really inspired me. We went into lockdown, and for me, that was a case of, look, I want to learn more about my own mental health journey, try and help others. And if I can combine that with my love of rugby, because I can't play it anymore, sounds a bit strange, but rugby sort of defines me as an individual. It was part of me that was missing. And if I can't play it, what else can I do? And that's kind of how it started.
So, you know, when you say that during lockdown, you started to learn more about your mental health journey, what did you learn? What did you address maybe at that period of time, maybe that you hadn't before then?
Yeah, so I went on a mental health first aid course, which was a 2-day course, just met some amazing people on that from all different walks of life. Learned a huge amount. That just sort of confirmed that I definitely wanted to learn more about this space, because I still struggle with it now on a daily basis. I was put on antidepressants when I was 21 and I'm still on them now at 45. I want to come off them eventually, but equally I don't want to rock the boat. So it was trying to learn and educate myself on it, the different challenges that people can go through, whether it's self-harm, eating disorders. There's a huge amount out there that people are struggling with.
Yeah, and just give us an idea then about how you're going about affecting the changes that you want to see. You're working with organisations and predominantly rugby clubs. What type of things are you doing, or is the charity doing with them, to kind of affect the change that Brave Mind would like to see?
So predominantly working with grassroots rugby clubs, rugby teams in universities, colleges, schools, all touch points of rugby. You know, I was talking to England Touch Rugby this morning. You know, initially when I first started it, was very much men's mental health. Then I thought, now this should just be, let's promote the game of rugby. Let's just try and help anybody. Yeah.
And when you say help, rugby, what are you actually, tell us a little bit about what you're actually doing.
Yeah, so we've got a club together initiative that we do. So we get around sort of 15, 16 people. So different representatives are from across the rugby club, whether that's minis and juniors, women's section, whoever, basically. We train them in mental health first aid and mental health awareness sessions. We've got a team of sports psychologists that we have on board that we've developed evidence-based sessions around dealing with stress, dealing with pressure, and we deliver that as part of the package. So that's what we're doing at the moment across the country.
Do you talk about pulling your socks up? Well, you might want me saying that during your career, you had some pretty testing moments, losing the England captaincy. What sort of help did you get when you were playing?
Well, I mean, not a great deal, as we've already heard. You know, mental health were two very distinct words, as mental and health. I mean, no one really understood the game of professional rugby anyway, certainly at my level, because we were doing things very much for the first time. You were expected to just cope with lots of things on your own, really. And no one really knew what the implications were of being a professional rugby player. We were the first people to do it. So until you've been there a period of time and there's been a bit of research and a bit of understanding, then you look back and think, well, what are the pressures? And I suppose I always had a reference point. You know, I lost my sister, which I talk about very openly. And that was the reason why I got into rugby, because I needed a family and a support system to help me and my parents. So yes, there's highs and lows in sport, and in rugby particularly. You win games, you lose games. I've been on the front page of the newspaper, sadly, been on the back page, happily. But the perspective is the important thing. When you've been in quite a different dark place like I was when I lost my sister, anything that happens thereafter is probably, if I lose a game of rugby, you know, of course I'm disappointed. If I lose for my country, I'm even more disappointed, but it's not like the same as getting the news that your sister's not coming home again, you know. So I was always able to put it in perspective and not be too upset. But we are a very, up until more recently, a very male-dominated environment. It's quite macho, it's quite alpha male. Of course we have issues and problems, but I think that it's the ultimate team game, but yet you sometimes, players and people within rugby clubs still feel very much on their own. And we used to have little kind of ways of trying to cope with it, which was to make sure that you paired people up within the club with someone else. And if there was like a buddy or a mentor, and if there was issues that you wanted to talk about that you didn't want to talk about openly in front of the coach or in front of maybe more senior players like myself, you could go and speak to your buddy and just have someone to have your back, really.
Who was your buddy?
Well, I've many, actually. I went through quite a few. I was in the same club for 20 years, don't forget. So I think within the England team, it was Neil Back, actually. Okay. So that was my guy.
I feel, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like things have started to change recently. That you know, it's a known fact, but the men are particularly bad at talking about their feelings and how they react to situations. But I do feel when you have prominent and well-known people, especially in the sport, in the sporting environment, come out and talk about their mental health journey, it has seemed to help, hasn't it? Do you feel like we're moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, COVID, although it was horrific for a lot of people, it had a positive impact because it put mental health up the agenda. Yeah. I think if you look at Owen, you know, recently talking about his challenges, it's incredibly sad. But on the positive element, somebody like that who's a leader, who's actually probably put things into perspective.
But I know, listen, it is sad to a point, but I don't think it is sad. I think it's actually very good, because what it does is it shows everyone in our sport, in the world generally, that it doesn't matter who you are,
exactly,
doesn't matter how high up the tree you climb and you get to, you have the same issues. And in many ways, there's stigma around mental health for people maybe that don't play at Owen's level is that, oh, that's a problem that affects me, doesn't affect anyone else. And for those who maybe think that Owen is incredibly resilient, which he is, and he has shown that, you know, there's a vulnerability there.
In all of us.
And the fact is that we should recognise that, and it shouldn't take Owen Farrell to have to do that himself or the people around him at Saracens. You know, the game doesn't really look after the individual. The recovery has got much, much better in our game of rugby, no doubt about that. Players are looked after, they're rested a tiny bit better than they ever used to be, but it doesn't look after the individual. And we are obsessed in rugby union with measurement. We measure lineouts, we measure scrums, we measure meters, made all these kind of stats. The one area you can't measure, and I say this all the time, is what's going on in people's head.
Yeah.
And if you could,
we don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
You're a very, very wealthy person. But the reality is that it is important. When we talk about player welfare and we talk about resting players, it's about resting their minds as well.
Yeah.
And look, I reflected this weekend. It's a pretty sad weekend in our sport, really. We've had international referees had death threats. We've had Tom Foley, who's just said, I'm stepping away from the international game, I've had enough, because he was the TMO in the World Cup final.
Yeah.
We've got Owen Farrell, who is most high profile, but I'm sure there's a number of other players who probably feel the same way. We've had a pundit on our channel who's been racially abused. I mean, is that society or is that rugby? Because there are some serious issues that are, you know, that we could tackle across all of it. I mean, our game's gone mad.
Do you talk about lockdown? Actually, for me, I mean, obviously, I'm not a sportsman. I'm just doing what I do and doing the job. But I've actually found that I've struggled more to cope with the changes that have come post-lockdown rather than during lockdown, because I think for men, our roles have changed so much in such a short space of time. A lot for the better.
In what way?
Well, I see a lot more now of my children than I ever did. But obviously, when I was in the office Monday to Friday, 9 to 5:30, that's your role. So that's your job. That's what you're expected to do. Whereas now you've got the leeway and you're able to do a little bit more in terms of hybrid working. So you can be here, you could be there. But now you're a little bit more, and there's a little bit more expectation on, well, you will have more of a role to play with the kids and you will do a little bit more. And then you're trying to balance. I mean, there are days when you get through and you go, I haven't given enough to work. I haven't given enough to my family. And I haven't given enough to myself. And you get to the end of that and go, what did I actually achieve today? And then you start processing it backwards again. And you think, well, all right, I'll try and do it again tomorrow. But you don't want, I guess, that to spiral in a way.
The critical thing you said there, though, is that I'll try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing, is just trying again. And it can be, there's this 5-minute rule where you just try something for 5 minutes. And that could be having a shower or getting out of bed or, you know, just doing some really small mundane tasks. but it's just trying. I think that's the thing. And recognizing that I've had a bad day. Things like that happen. And it's saying, right, tomorrow's a new day. Let's try again.
Yeah, Simon, I'm really intrigued. You know, you obviously are having conversations through your own experiences with rugby players across the board, from grassroots, as you mentioned, all the way up to international superstars. I know we've had Marley Packer on the show. She's an ambassador for this charity, Brave Mind. We've got the likes of the Willis brothers. What are the challenges that you're hearing from some of your grassroots players all the way up to the top end of the game, to someone like Marley Packer?
I think it's just overcoming that fear of feeling ashamed, feeling embarrassed. I think that element of vulnerability and being open with yourself is huge. And I think what I'm seeing is if someone's in a bad place, you can offer support, you can offer help. If they don't want to help themselves, they won't improve. That's the big thing.
How do you get someone to talk, though, who doesn't want to talk?
Oh, that's a very, very good question.
Do you let them, because I'm sure that the people listening to this and maybe know that a relation or a friend is going through this, but if that person doesn't want to talk, do you leave them not talk? Because that's quite worrying then. Or do you make them talk? Like, how?
I don't know, you can't make anybody talk. I think we've got to create an environment and a culture that we educate ourselves on these matters. Listening. I think there's a lot of people that are probably scared of going into this space, where actually it's just about listening and being a kind individual, being kind and supportive. Before I started the charity, I was scared of doing the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing. But actually, there's no kind of right or wrong way. I think just by being a nice human being, just listening and understanding. And I think what I meant by saying it was sad for Owen is a case of, you know, he's taken a huge amount of abuse that didn't need to, you know, with other people and pundits and things, that we are in this society at the moment that I look at it and look on Twitter and social media and just think, what is going on?
I mean, there's no room whatsoever for any particular personal abuse directed at anyone, quite frankly. Whenever I wrote or said things on the paper or newspaper, and don't forget, I've been the other side of it as well. I was used to think, would I be prepared to say that to someone if they were standing right in front of me there and then? And obviously, social media, it doesn't allow you that.
Would you just forget social media? Just don't bother with it. Don't go on it.
It's part of society, though, Steve. And the issue I have with this is, right, when people are constantly telling our sports stars, or like, you know, yeah, you know, we don't know you. You need to, like, show us your personalities. Then they go on social media, they go on X or whatever and show personalities, and people are there to batter them down. So it's like, there is not an answer to this, Simon, is there? There's not a right or wrong answer.
Well, I would challenge to say that there needs to be some form of policing.
Yes, well, there is that,
you know,
obviously.
They need to be protected. You know, they're put out into the spotlight. And yeah, I completely get it. Sorry, you know, if they're going to put their guard down and show vulnerability, then they become easy targets, right? Mm. So it's that, what is that? There's a fine line between it. But going back to what you said, Lawrence, it's like, we're all human beings. There's one thing just mentioned with regards to people like Marley, Jack and Tom. Mm. And especially with young people, is when they've come to university sessions or college sessions, it's a big eye-opener for these youngsters to actually go, God, they're just normal people.
Yeah.
You know, you may see them playing at Twickenham or in a World Cup or in a European Cup, but actually when they talk about their struggles off the pitch, whether that's injuries, contracts, or what's going on in their lives, there's a big light bulb moment for these youngsters to go, oh, they're just ordinary people.
Yeah. I want to ask you, not everyone is a high-profile rugby player or high-profile sportsman. So what other work do you do with grassroots, with young children or young adults?
So we've had a sort of an ongoing discussion internally as a team of sort of, how young do you start this conversation? We've started it kind of year 9, year 10 in secondary schools. And a lot of the work that we've been doing is actually with university students. So we did some research last year, just asking students what they wanted help with. And anxiety just kept coming back. You know, there's a lot of students that are anxious. And we said, well, okay, what are you anxious about? And it was kind of understanding what anxiety is, the effects it has, not just mentally, but physically. We talk about performance anxiety, exams. There was a huge amount with regards to the pressures of doing a degree or GCSEs, etc. And the last one was social anxiety. Because again, huge amount of people or students, young people off the back of COVID, not going out. And it's not just students, right? You know, I've had times where walking into a bar on your own or something, you know, that social anxiety is there. So we developed a bespoke program that was written by our team of psychologists. We're now going in and delivering those sessions in two universities at Surrey and at Sussex. Those sessions that we've kind of targeted towards young people is dealing with stress, managing stress, life transitions. I think it's that expectation as well that a lot of youngsters have now. You know, it's very different from when I grew up. You know, we didn't have the social media, didn't have those influencers there. It was very much, I guess we were quite naive at the time. We just got on with life, right? So I think it's a very difficult time for young people to come through and just go, right, what's right, what's wrong? What's success? What's normality? All of these things. And I guess we're just trying to put things into perspective and help them on that journey. And, you know, that word resilience, you know, you're not born with resilience. You know, resilience is developed over a certain amount of time. And I think there's a lot of youngsters that, you know, that resilience is pretty low at the moment. And we're just trying to help them build it and just, you know, say, look, I know you're struggling. That's okay. But here are some coping strategies. Here's some exercises that you could do. And also just being in a room with a group of young people that are open to having honest conversations, you know, lads that are saying, yeah, I'm struggling at the moment. And, you know, they just want to have those conversations as friends and as teammates. I think there's the apps that are there and the signposting is there, but sometimes it's just having a conversation and just trying to be nice mates. The schools that we've helped, it's gone a bit full circle really, because you kind of, you go and you start talking to the youngsters and then sort of highlights that the teachers are under quite a lot of pressure. So it's kind of helping the teachers and then kind of full circle back around to the parents, because there are parents out there that are not fully educated on, and what should I say to my children? You know, having the confidence to be able to say, look, we're here. It's just trying to create that environment at home that they feel comfortable to be able to say, do you know what, mum, dad, you know, I'm struggling at the moment.
So for the, how can people get in touch with your charity? How can people, you know, who are listening, who could, who've got a friend or a relation who wants a bit of help, who might need a bit of help.
Or they themselves need a bit of help.
Yeah, so our website, bravemind.co.uk, Instagram, _bravemind, and Twitter, which is bravemind14. So yeah, come through our DMs via that. We've got support online. We've got a team of psychologists that are available. And we just want to help. We just want to do our bit. Like I said right at the beginning, if I can help one person, if I can prevent a suicide, then I've done my job.
Well, listen, thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks.
We'll be incredibly supportive of everything you're doing. Keep fighting the fight and doing what you're doing.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Let's have a chat about the rugby action we've got coming up this weekend then, shall we? Shall we, gents?
We shall.
Okay. Joining us for that is the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Perwell. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. How are you guys?
Good. I feel like we've got a restraining order, though, against you, because you're never actually in the studio with us. It's like Nick can come on, but he can only come on via Zoom.
He lives in the country, that's why.
I live in blinking Wales and I come all the way up here, Nick Perwell. I'm just saying. There are trains, you know. But it's good to see you. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's all good.
Now, what a great weekend. It was in the Premiership. Cracking wins for Harlequin. Bristol, Bath, Northampton and Leicester. Top half of the table is now looking very exciting, isn't it, Lol? It's taking shape slowly.
Well, I think we've had the World Cup. We've had teams that have had their stars that have come back, and none more so that were settled in than Saracens, where they went on, I think, a 5 or 6 match run. That's where Nick was when he wasn't at home. I bumped into him down at the Stoneneck Stadium on Saturday. And I think the lovely thing about the Premiership is that, you know, it's got that little bit of unpredictability every now and again. Saracens were beaten. I think they were probably deservedly beaten as well by an outstanding Northampton Saints side. And it was definitely Courtney Laws' captaincy that might have just shaded Maritoji, who was standing in for Owen Farrell. Harlequins, again, superb. That whole debate around Marcus Smith, particularly given Farrell's stood down now. And he was up against George Ford. And of course, everyone, including ourselves, make it about Marcus Smith and George Ford. But clearly the Harlequins forwards had decided to come back off their bank holiday rest and actually performed, you know, very, very well indeed. Mm. So, you know, it's a really interesting. And I was lucky enough to be at Leicester, where it was cold, wet. But they had 5 or 6 World Cup playing internationals in their forward pack. And then they obviously had Pollard and Ben Youngs. And it was inevitable, really, that they were 47-3. And talking about mental health, as we were earlier on the show, a passionate sort of interview from Alex Codling, I thought, after the game.
Really, emotional.
Newcastle, tough interview to give about the fact that there's only so much you can say to players when they're giving absolutely everything, but there's just not quite the quality. I mean, you know, £3 million spend versus £8 or £9 million is difficult to bridge.
How are they going to solve that? I mean, I read a piece this morning, which I thought was a bit harsh, which said, what was the point of Newcastle? But having worked up there for 2 years and knowing that rugby is not their number one sport, we know that. But how are they going to bridge that gap?
Well, they're not on their own unless they find someone who's willing to put their hand in their pocket. But how is rugby dealing with anything at the moment? Why would you let WASC go bust? Why would you let Worcester go bust? Why would you let London Irish go bust? And potentially, Newcastle are now 8 from 8, having not won a single game. If you're the person putting money into Newcastle, you're probably thinking, how much longer am I going to do that for? So the game needs to collectively get together and help itself and help each other.
Who is the game, though? Well, you're saying the game needs to get collectively. Nobody can agree on anything in the game at the moment.
The game is the governing body, the RFU, Premiership Rugby, and the clubs themselves. As I keep telling people, you know, sport is about rivalry, but if there isn't anyone to rival you, you're not going to league. And, you know, we try and talk very positively about the league, and there were some wonderful moments across the weekend, but we've still got this kind of cloud above us about, you know, the financial stability of the competition itself.
Who's next?
And, you know, we need to work together to make sure that we are keeping our best players in the league. The RFU could have a massive say in that. So I think there's issues every week that we need to address.
What do you think, Nick?
Well, I think the game has taken itself to a point that it can't sustain. In every facet, in every level. And these are all the things that, and you're talking about finances, you're talking about player safety, you're talking about future of the game. This is everything that everybody who had a problem with the game going professional when it did said would happen, and it has. And I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. And so did a lot of people at the time. These were the concerns. And when the game went professional, nobody looked at how to mitigate against any of these issues or solve these problems. Talk about Newcastle specifically, Seymour Kurdi, the owner. If he hadn't stepped in and taken over from Dave Thompson when he basically run his coffers dry, then the club wouldn't exist. There was a point when John Hall turned around to Ken Nottage, the late Ken Nottage, who just recently died, and massive respect to him and his family, and rest in peace, Ken. He transformed Gloucester under Tom Walkinshaw. But before that, he was in charge of the sporting club in Newcastle. And so John Hall went to him at one point and said, wind it up, you've got a week. Everything but the football club is gone. And Ken said, look, give me 2. I can sort something out here. And he did. That's when he found Dave Thompson to take over. Dave Thompson bought the Falcons for £1, I think it was. And when Seymour Kurdi took over, there wasn't much different then, because people, you know, who have deep pockets come in and they empty their pockets. And there's no solution to that. Everybody is guilty by association for that. And it's easy to say, why shouldn't WASC go under? Why shouldn't Worcester and London Irish and all the rest of it? But WASC had debts of more than £100 million. And these things can't keep going on. The other clubs weren't much better. It's disastrous that all these clubs have gone under. But by the same token, London Irish, the owners were saying for months and months and months, we've got these American investors. And it turned out to be a load of nonsense. You know, I know WASC obviously got plans to come back. And I'm confident that WASC will do that. Fair play to them. I don't think we'll see Worcester again. We definitely won't see London Irish again. And even now, with 10 teams, we're struggling to sustain 10. So when the game went professional, the clubs took control and sidelined the RFU. That was the RFU's fault because they were too slow to get going. But at this time, everyone's got to come together and find a solution. And it isn't based around money. But if they can't afford to keep the top players, let them go and let them play for England. Don't cut your nose off to spite your face. Find a way to make it work. Let them go abroad, earn the money that they can earn, but let's not hold the game back.
I'm just looking forward to coming into this podcast in the next few months with some positive news and something to be happy about. Can we look ahead, please, to the opening rounds of European rugby?
But on a positive
note. If it's negative.
No, on a positive note, and in defence of Newcastle, they've cut their cloth accordingly. And
yes,
they've done exactly that in order that they continue as a going concern. And that is to their great credit, because it's so easy, as we've seen, for clubs just to blow the budgets and disappear. And they're doing everything they can to keep going. There's a massive loyal fan base in the Northeast. It's not the biggest, but it is very loyal. And
very passionate.
They're trying, exactly, and they're trying to keep it going. And that is to their great credit.
In fairness to them, they have to target a game, that they feel they can win, probably likely to be at Kingston Park and not at Welford Road, which is one of the hardest places to win against a team that was packed full of internationals. So they'll keep working hard, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's look ahead then. Let's turn our attention to the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. Champions Cup sees 24 elite clubs, 8 each from the Gallagher Premiership, URC, and the top 14 in 4 pools of 6. Games are played over 8 weekends with 4 pool stage rounds and 4 knockout stage rounds, all of which will culminate in the final 2024, which will be staged at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday, the 25th of May. Meanwhile, the second tier competition, the Challenge Cup, sees 16 teams qualify from across the Premiership, URC, and top 14, plus 2 teams not in those leagues but who are invited to take part. This season, they are the Cheetahs from South Africa and Georgia's Black Lion Rugby Club. So there you go. That's the rundown for you. Gloucester, Newcastle will be taking part in the Challenge Cup with the rest of the Premiership teams competing in the Champions Cup. Nick, how challenging is it for teams to now have a break from the league, especially those near the bottom of the table maybe, who will be desperately wanting to add points onto their current campaign, and also for teams who possibly travel quite far afield ahead of next weekend, like Saracens, who will be travelling to South Africa, or Gloucester, who will head over to Tbilisi. It's tough, isn't it? It's tough to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's key is that these games are, for the Challenge Cup, you'd say they're the kinds of games where it can be a bit of a shot to nothing, and it could be quite freeing for teams that haven't been playing so well. But the Champions Cup games, the standard is absolutely massive. The intensity is right there. It's the closest thing to Test match rugby in club rugby, really. So at the top end. So for the clubs like Saracens, who will want to go deep in it, the important thing is to have an extremely fast start. Good news that Owen Farrell should be fit this weekend, which would make a big difference to their chances.
I think that, you know, let's be positive about this competition. I think you all know my feelings about it, and I'm sure I share the feelings about the same players that play at these top clubs. It's the greatest competition in the world in club rugby. It is international rugby in club colours, and I was fortunate enough to be at a club that won it twice. It's just phenomenal. And we've got a new sponsor in Investec, so it will be referred to as the Investec Champions Cup. And I think if you were marketing this tournament, we've obviously got the South African rugby players. They are the world champions. So we've got the world's best players playing in this competition. So it is, I think, for those who haven't seen it, it's an incredible tournament to watch. We've got 2 weeks of mouthwatering rugby. I'm down in Bath, and they're a former champion. They've got one star above their crest a long, long time ago, but they do seem like a team that are on the up. Some amazing players playing very well. So looking forward to seeing them against Ulster. It's just quite unique fixtures, really. And then obviously
you're not going to Tbilisi then.
he is though. Where are you going? You are going somewhere.
Are you going to Georgia at all? A trip.
Don't think I'm going to Georgia. I mean, Sarah knows that I would volunteer to go pretty much anywhere in the world.
How far is it? If there's a night out, Lawrence will be there.
Yeah, exactly.
How far
if there's two nights out, I'm definitely there.
How far is that trip? I mean, that is a long way to
that
go.
Is a long
on the
way.
Back of,
well, it depends if you're going on a charter or a private, doesn't it, really? Let's be honest with you.
When have we ever gone on a private jet?
Very true.
Come now. So you'll be in Bath on Saturday. Where are you Sunday?
I'm at Sale, who will be looking to bounce back.
Same.
And Sale are top of the table. They've had that big game against Harlequins that they lost. And they're up against Stade Francais, who are kind of back, aren't they, really? Back with a band looking like the Stade Francais of old. Hold on a minute. Let's just talk about Sunday. La Rochelle. I love it when you say this word.
La Rochelle.
For our listeners.
La Rochelle.
La Rochelle against Leinster. I mean, that was a repeat of the last 2 years' finals.
Yeah.
And obviously, Ronan O'Gara and his team not having it all their own way at the moment.
No.
Leinster obviously have got that new South African coach. How are the Irish players going to cope with playing this level of rugby, having been disappointed of losing the World Cup? And it's down in La Rochelle. So huge, huge games, as you say. Racing against Harlequins. Just looking across
Henry
that
Arundel
fixtures.
Back. That'd be a good, great game.
I mean, yeah. Toulouse-Cardiff, wasn't that the first one of the first finals?
It was, it was. Who are you looking forward to, Nick? Which tie are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think it'll be great to see how Quins go out at Racing, to be honest, because, you know, inside stadium, dry pitch, lovely conditions, great fast track, two teams that love to move the ball around. There's going to be some brilliant attacking rugby in there. Yeah, Henry Arundel started like a dream under Stuart Lancaster at Racing, and I think that'll only help him improve all the time. And yeah, Marcus Smith over there and all those guys doing their thing off the back of a good win, so massive morale boosting win last weekend. So that's going to be one for the high scoring purists anyway, I reckon. And I think that'll be some game. And just in terms of go back to finances briefly, yeah, Investec, that's great news that they're on board as a new sponsor. And I think the influx of the South African teams can't be underestimated in terms of sponsorship opportunities. The TV deal in South Africa is massive money for the competition. That's a huge, huge boost. And on top of that, it makes it easier to bring in companies, especially like Investec, that have a big profile in South Africa. And on top of that, the Tbilisi and the Georgia issue, you know, Georgia are obviously clearly very keen to press their rugby. There's a lot of fairly moneyed individuals involved in Georgian rugby and have a massive passion for it. And I think that's another massive avenue the game needs to explore moving forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I concur.
So where are you at the weekend? I'm
at Connaught, and Connaught against... What other team's name do you love me?
Bordeaux,
yes. I'm just basically here for entertainment value, right?
No. Okay, no. So we love your beautiful Welsh accent.
Connaught Bordeaux, okay. Yeah. And then I'm with you in Sale on Sunday.
Who's your winners?
Well, I think you've got La Rochelle Leinster, which has been the final. But I do think that there's Toulon are back in a big way. I think Toulouse are very much part of the equation. And I have to say that the likes of Saracens, Racing, you know, the usual suspects will be there or thereabounts.
So that was six teams.
He's covering bases. He did that in the World Cup as well. Who thinks going to win, Lawrence? Will it either be South Africa, New Zealand, Ireland, or France?
Well,
thanks.
I'm not
brilliant.
I'm not saying it's anyone before a ball's even been kicked.
No,
fair enough.
This is true.
It was a stupid question.
Right. Gents, a pleasure as always. Never a chore. Well, sometimes a chore, just not today.
Yeah, well, listen. So, thank you very much indeed for you.
For
and
me.
To Steve. See, I start by introducing you so beautifully, and then, you know.
You actually forgot me at the start of the show, but never mind.
Right. Say goodbye, Lawrence.
Okay. Thank you also to Sarah Elgin.
Thank you, Lawrence Dallaglio.
Thank you to Steve Cordy.
Thank you, Lawrence.
And a special thanks, also to Nick, and a special thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next week. See you then.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.